I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. A year ago this month, firefighters in southwest Kansas battled the largest wildfire in state history. The city of Ashland, which was evacuated during the blaze, has since rebuilt. But exactly how do communities bounce back? Today we'll learn how residents are dealing with this year's fire season and ask how lives have changed since last March. But first, you may be wondering when the new single terminal project will finally be completed out at KCI. We'll speak with the developer and get an update from the city's aviation department. We'll wrap with this week's State House Blend, Missouri. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. The process was long and it was messy, but Maryland-based Edgemoor Infrastructure and Real Estate now has a memorandum of understanding to build a $1 billion new terminal at Kansas City International Airport. The council took that important step in February. It gives Edgemoor the inside track on developing the new single terminal, but it doesn't commit the city to the developer. Other issues still must be worked out, among them the design and maximum price tag for the terminal. Also outstanding is any sort of agreement on how much the project will consist of union jobs. Now an update on one of the most massive projects in city history. With us are Jeff Strickler. He's Managing Director of Edgemoor. Jeff, welcome. Nice to have you here.
Thanks, Steve.
Justin Myers, Deputy Director of Aviation for Marketing and Air Service Development for the Kansas City Department of Aviation. Justin, nice to have you too.
Good to see you, Steve.
And for our listeners, your calls are welcome on this issue. The number here, 816-235-2888. What do you want to see in this new billion-dollar airport terminal? Again, our number, 816-235-2888. So a lot of Kansas Citians assumed that once the Memorandum of Understanding was signed, that the process was over, but it's not, Jeff. So give us an overview here. Where do negotiations on this new airport terminal stand right now?
Sure. So we are meeting with the city weekly to go over the contract, the development agreement. It's obviously going to be a very large and complex agreement given the requirements for the design, for the construction, for the financing of the airport, the environmental work. And so we have a plan laid out to get the contract negotiated throughout the spring and summer to be ready to come before council in early fall.
Do you think the process is on track?
Yeah, we have weekly meetings. They are going very well. We're making great progress, and so I'm confident we'll get to an agreement that's good for both sides.
Justin, from the city standpoint, are negotiations on track?
They are, and it's been really positive to watch the Edgemoor team build their team, especially with local participation. So watching them build out their construction team with local Kansas Cityans has been really positive to observe.
Jeff, when do you expect construction to begin, and what's the latest thinking on when this new terminal might open?
Sure. So demolition is slated to happen late fall, early winter.
This is of Horseshoe A, right?
Of Horseshoe A, correct.
Right.
After the environmental decision is recorded in late September, early October, and then construction of the brand new terminal should start in spring of 19.
And then it'll be completed?
End of 2021 is the target right now.
End of 2021. So we're still 3 years plus away from.
Correct.
Yeah, this new thing. Okay. One big issue here is the maximum price of this project. Have you arrived at that figure yet?
So the plan as part of the contract negotiation is to take design to 30%. And at that point, we would fix the price for the aviation department for the airlines.
What does that mean, take design to 30%?
So we are designing the airport. What was seen back in the fall was some rendering, some images of what the building could look like, both from the inside and the outside. But now we have to go through the detailed process with the architects and the engineers to actually draw the building, lay out the structure, lay out the mechanical systems, the electrical systems, make sure that what we're designing meets what Justin and the aviation department and what their customers, the airlines, need from a functionality perspective. And so that design will get about 30% complete, and then we will fix the price based on those drawings.
Justin Meyer with the Aviation Department for the City of Kansas City. Just how complex a project is this?
It's a big one. You mentioned one of the biggest ones in Kansas City's history, and it absolutely is. I think one of the things that makes it so interesting is how many moving pieces there are to this. And Jeff has mentioned that we've been doing weekly meetings and continuing to move forward in program validation, working to make sure that all the assumptions that we've made years ago are still accurate today. And when I mention things that are moving, well, since the positive vote on the new terminal, we've actually added 4 new airlines at the airport. So there are axes that are all in play as things are going forward. So we're really working to just finalize and get an idea of what exactly we have as we go forward.
So if that's the case, Jeff, if you're trying to hit a moving target in some ways, how do you design an airport?
Well, the target's not moving in the sense that we are validating the program, and that becomes, in essence, the foundation, the building blocks upon which design moves forward. And so, as Justin described, the original work done for Exhibit K was done back in 2015. And what we wanted to do was make sure that we're designing an airport that meets 2018, 2021, and beyond, and make sure that the assumptions that were made previously are still valid so that we're not have to go back and redesign work.
You know, Justin, we just heard that Terminal A, one of the 3 horseshoes, will be demolished at some point here. What happens to the other two?
The other two get to operate up until a cutover, which is one of the best parts of this project, is that there's not a significant inconvenience to airport users up until then.
We're lucky that way, aren't
Very
we?
Very lucky that way, and lucky in that we'll be able to utilize so much of the existing infrastructure that we have at the airport. The current economy lots will stay the economy lots. The current rental car facility will stay the rental car facility. The current tower will be the tower. So when it comes to affordability, utilizing that Terminal A space that's vacant makes the project very affordable. What happens to B and C going forward? That's a good question. One of the things that we're working on. B definitely needs to come down. That terminal needs to come down to create overnight parking spaces. We've got about 30 airplanes, 30, maybe even 40 airplanes in the future schedule that spend the night in Kansas City that don't sleep on a gate, don't sleep on a jet bridge.
Airplanes sleep too, eh?
Yeah, so we need to find that space around the facility and in proximity to the new terminal. So B needs to come down to create parking for aircraft. We've talked about how B Garage could survive to become space for the airport employees. We currently spend about $1 million a year busing employees from the I-29 Mexico City employee parking lot, which is up there, to the terminals. So if we were to able to utilize existing infrastructure like the B Garage and let that become employee parking, that ends up saving a lot of operating costs by creating new parking right in proximity to the new terminal for the employees.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking about the development of the new single terminal up at KCI, getting an update here from Jeff Stricker, who's the managing director of Edgemoor, that has the has a memorandum of understanding with the city to go ahead and design that new structure. Justin Meyer is also here. He's with the Kansas City Department of Aviation. Our phone number, 816-235-2888. Let's go to some calls here, and John from Kansas City, Missouri. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Steve and Jeff. I'd like to know, in the worst case scenario, what financial security is there for Kansas City, Missouri, a la a bond, so that if Edgemoor, in the worst case scenario, happens to go belly up in the middle of the project, that our city isn't left holding the bag?
Sure. So let me address that a couple of ways. First of all, as you may recall, the way the project is funded is 100% from airline revenue. So there's no city taxes, no city taxpayer would ever be left holding the bag. We will, in addition, there will be what they call a security package as part of the development agreement that will typically include things like payment and performance bonds that would require, if for some reason we were to go away, the insurance companies to step in to finish the airport.
Is that typical the way new airports are built these days, with user fees from passenger tickets, that kind of thing? Is that just the way it's done all over the country?
Yeah, that's typical financing. One of the attractive things for us as a developer at airports is that there is a revenue stream to help pay for improvements. So whether it's passenger facility fees, whether it's leases with the airlines, whether it's parking revenue, there's an income stream that helps to pay for it. And there are also very strict rules with the FAA around airport revenue diversion, saying that all the revenue generated on airport property has to stay on airport property.
Again, it sounds like, Jeff, that the notion that Kansas City and KCI particularly has so much space is really advantageous to you guys as you try to plan this massive project.
Sure. I mean, there's, as Justin said, there's a lot of work at airports all across the country. They're typically renovations or renovations and expansions. This is going to be a greenfield, completely new build terminal, which is pretty unique. But given the current configuration of the airport and the fact that there's literally 10 or 11,000 acres that could be built on over time, tremendous opportunity for Kansas City, not only to get this new terminal, but for economic development growth for decades to come.
I was going to say, is there room built into this project for expansion on the new site if indeed 30 years from now, 40 years from now, we need to expand?
Sure, and that's a great question. One of the things that we've been working with Justin and his team on is expandability. So deliver the terminal on day one, but as demand grows, how would you expand the terminal to make it fluid and easy, and plan, have those thoughts today so that when that date happens in the future, it's set up for expansion easily.
Now, Justin, there's been all this talk during the campaign for the new single terminal and even before then about the potential for more flights, additional flights coming to the airport once this terminal is up and running. What can you tell us on that front? Do you still look like that could happen? Do you know anything more today than you did a few months ago?
One of my primary responsibilities in my job is recruiting airlines to Kansas City. And so I have a really strong relationship with the route planners at all of our airline partners and those that aren't yet here. You know, I met with JetBlue earlier this year, and I've met with several international carriers that are not Iceland Air, as trying to convince them that the Kansas City makes sense for them in the future. And one of our most recent air service announcements was Southwest to Raleigh-Durham. That service begins in April. And in the conversation I had with them, they said, please recognize that this has a lot to do with the decision of the community to move forward. Because the community and the city of Kansas City is investing, we are choosing to invest as well. And I think that we don't necessarily need to wait for the new terminal to see the results of the decision that are made. And some of these routes that are being added, and I mentioned the four new airlines that are coming to Kansas City, are all tied to the fact that it's about to get better for all of our airline partners. And people are getting into position to be here when we cut the ribbon on the new terminal.
You know, Justin, in your position with the aviation department, are there certain routes that you're trying to fill? Are there gaps in our service that you want to see go away at some point?
Well, our largest unserved markets were Raleigh, and I mentioned Southwest starts that in April. Frontier also starts that in April, so we go from zero to two carriers here next month. Pittsburgh was one of our largest unserved routes, and that one, with over 100 passengers a day, one jet just began flying last week from Kansas City. So we're checking off the list and moving through. One of the big projects we've been working on has been the international piece and the transatlantic piece. So we're super pleased that Iceland Air made a decision to start for summer of 2018. And that's going to be seasonal, less than daily service, but really hope the route performs well, which means that there's opportunity for growth with Iceland Air and potentially other carriers, transatlantic.
What does Iceland Air do for our potential to begin serving European markets?
Well, there's not a ton of local demand between Kansas City and Iceland. The real benefit is the stopover and the connections. In 90 minutes, you can connect from Kansas City, land in Iceland, and be on your way to one of 25 destinations into Europe. Everything, you know, London, Paris, Frankfurt, and tons of secondary cities that are hard to get to via one stop through the U.S. You know, you can go one stop over Kansas City to Atlanta, Atlanta to Paris, but it's not as easy to get to Zurich or Berlin, for example. So there's a lot more itineraries and convenience, saying nothing about the fact that this is a lower cost carrier and a low fare carrier. And is currently, I'm seeing prices out there where they're essentially a third of the price of the main carriers that are in the transatlantic marketplace now. So
really?
Yeah, we'll definitely see demand stimulated as a result.
So I have a brother who lives in Madrid. I can go see him more cheaply than I have in the past.
Significantly more.
That's interesting. 816-235-2888. We're talking about the big new single terminal up at KCI and progress on construction of that new terminal. Let's go back to some calls here. And Justin from Kansas City, Missouri, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I have a question about the terminal. I would like to know whether or not there are plans to incorporate a light rail terminal or stop for the streetcar and potential expansion, and if not, why?
Okay, light rail or streetcar access to the new airport. I don't know if that's sure. in your ballpark or not, Jeff.
So one of the things that we've been talking to the aviation department and others in the community, and it's a great question because we did a series of design open houses throughout the winter where we went out to every council member's district and asked for feedback from the community. And transit was certainly something that came up at several of the meetings and important to the community. So what we are looking at is ways to incorporate a transit stop or a transit center as part of the project, likely to be housed in the garage, that would provide access for more mass transit. The other piece we're kicking around from a design perspective is obviously we don't control if light rail ever comes out to the airport or not, but if it did, where could it go? And can we reserve some space in the design now piece of real estate such that it's accommodated 10, 20, 30 years down the future?
And to the point Jeff made earlier about airport funding and what you can do and can't do with airport revenue, I think that's really important to remember that just as we can't use airport revenue to fix potholes, we can't use airport revenue to build a new streetcar line.
I was wondering about that.
The airlines see that and the FAA sees that as money leaving the airport. So when you look at cases where other airports have done projects like this, Orlando is kind of building a train station right now, and that's about all they can do. The airport can do is build the station, build the connectivity. It needs to be on the light rail provider or the city or whoever the funding source is to construct and build. Washington Dulles is doing the same, right? Extending the Silver Line to Washington Dulles Airport. They're building a new train platform with airport dollars, but it's Metro in Washington that needs to get the train there.
Do you have any idea how much it would cost to run the streetcar line from, I guess, downtown out to the airport? That can't be cheap.
Yeah, it's not a number I've seen.
It's a long way out there. Mm-hmm. Here we are sort of struggling over to extend it out to the plaza. This would be multiples of something like that in terms of cost, right?
That's right.
Okay. Let's go back to some calls here. Let's go to Taylor from Blue Springs. Taylor, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question about the updates. I know, I agree it needs to be updated, but with the KCEI airport, I've flown all around the country, and arguably it's the most easiest or convenient airport to get through, the quickest, the terminals are right there when you get dropped off. So with the new updates, what is a part of it to still ensure that it's not going to be so congested or, the ease of getting through it?
Taylor, thanks. And Jeff, I'm just guessing that the word convenient is a word you've heard only about 89,000 times the last few months.
Yeah, 90,000, something like that. And it's a great question. And yes, Taylor, it's something we've heard a lot, and we know that that's what many in the community love about the current airport. A couple of things. Kansas City is one of only two in the top 25 or 50 largest markets that still has arrivals and departures on the same level. The other is Oakland. And so one of the things in our design is we separate arrivals and departures so that instantly half the traffic at any given point in time is on the upper level, half is on the lower level.
Yeah.
That should make it more convenient and easier for drop-off and pickup. The proximity from the roadway to get through the front door of the terminal to get to security and then out to your gate is the same or less, depending on which gate or carrier you're ultimately flying. The walking distance should be about the same. It could be shorter. It could be a little bit longer. So we understand the convenience of the current facility and are doing everything we can to replicate that in the new design.
You know, one thing, Justin, I wanted to bring up. Eric Adler of the Star, one of my colleagues there, has written about this project, and his conclusion from having visited other airports was this new terminal is not going to be a huge facility. I mean, in fact, he was surprised by just how cozy this new airport will be compared to other new airports around the country, including Indianapolis. Does he have a point?
No, absolutely.
Your listeners need to wrap their arms around that idea.
A lot of the I love KCI and I hate Atlanta and I hate Chicago. We heard that quite a bit, and it's paramount to remember that we're not doing Atlanta and we're not doing Chicago and Denver here. The peer group is, just as Eric saw as he was out and about, it's peer group is Indianapolis, peer group is Raleigh-Durham, peer group is Austin, Texas, and Dallas Love Field. Those are the airports that we're similar to.
You don't have to hop on a light rail train to get from one terminal to the other like you do in Atlanta.
That's right. And one of the things that we heard consistently hear from airport users that enjoy the experience now, and that's great, and I'm appreciative of everyone that enjoys the experience that we're working to deliver today. But there are things that we don't have enough of. We don't have enough chairs inside the gate areas as airplanes have gotten bigger. We don't have enough restrooms inside the gate areas. We don't have enough concession space. And all of that's fighting for a very small area. So as we've kind of talked with people and helped them understand, we're not going to build JFK, but would you take 20 more steps to have, to not stand in line for a restroom? And when we kind of start looking at those kind of examples, for the most part, people are with us to understand that, yeah, there are things that we need to do to bring a 1960s design into the reality of what air travel is today.
Jeff, before I lose you, another outstanding issue out there is the percentage of this project that will be completed by union workers. Has that been resolved?
So we are continuing to meet with the labor community. We know, obviously, number one, Kansas City is a very strong labor market. Number two, the construction team that we have on the project has great relationships with labor both here in Kansas City as well as all across the country. We understand the importance of bringing labor on, and we want labor harmony. We've also made a very strong commitment to the council and the community around minority and women business participation.
And it's tough to do both in some cases, right? Because some of those other groups aren't unionized right now.
Correct. Some of those firms are not unionized, and so that's the thrust of the conversation that we're continuing to have is how to meet the commitment to the labor community as well as make our commitments to city council, the mayor, and the broader community about minority and women-owned business. The phrase that's been said a lot about this project, given its size, is a transformational project. And we want to ensure that we have a transformational impact here in Kansas City and that we leave a legacy impact. And to do that, we think we need strong minority and women business participation in the project.
You know, Kansas Cityans who have seen renderings of the inside of the new terminal, maybe in the newspaper, will remember that the water feature in the middle of the terminal, it's so striking. Should we expect that idea to survive in the final renderings?
We were talking about fountain. Obviously, Kansas City is known as the city of fountains, and so we think that's a critical design element, an idea we put forward. We did hear, and one of the great things about the design open houses was several ideas about how to perhaps modernize that fountain and show it in different ways. And so we've taken that feedback back, and now we're trying to determine what's the best way to represent the fountain within the terminal.
Now, you've mentioned the notion of public hearings this morning, and there have been any number of them. Are there others still coming up that maybe citizens should be aware of?
There's none planned for the moment, but we are working on a strategy to come back out to the community again sometime later this spring or summer to have continue the conversation.
And just want to point out that there are quite a few public updates that are en route. I'll be presenting at KC Stat here, I believe, next week with an update on some of the airport metrics and some of the things that we're doing moving forward. We'll have an update to City Council on the 12th of April and another update on the 19th of April to the Airport Committee. And all those, of course, are open to the public.
Jeff, just a final point. This was one long process, one contentious process to get here. Lots of controversy, lots of confusion. What do you make of it all?
Every procurement that we've been involved with over the last 15 or 16 years has sort of its unique issues, and Kansas City is no different in that sense. It was perhaps more political than some of the other pursuits we've had and won, but it's turned out to be one where the community has been extremely embracing of us and our ideas and what we're trying to do for the community.
Politics in Kansas City, Justin, are you kidding me?
We're going to get there. We're going to get there.
How did that happen? Yeah. You feel good about it going forward.
It's a project that needs to happen. Our airport terminal designed for supersonic jets for TWA, and they're not around anymore, and the supersonic jets didn't really happen. So we've got to kind of bring things in line with what the future is going to be, and we're pleased to be lined up with these guys to get it done.
We'll leave our conversation there. That was Justin Meyer. He's with the Kansas City Department of Aviation. Jeff Stricker is the managing director of Edgemore. Thanks very much for coming in, and good luck with your work, okay? Gentlemen,
thanks,
appreciate
Steve.
It very
Thank
much.
Thank you very much, Steve. See ya.
Time for a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about fire season out in western Kansas, and are things getting any better? Here's a quick answer, no. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. Yesterday on the show, we learned how to break up with bad habits, and we met with the leader of Kansas's Embattled Department for Children and Families. Hear those conversations at kcur.org/uptodate. Tomorrow, as the weather warms up, many kids are heading outside. Our pediatric care pros will tell us how to prepare children for a safe season of swimming, biking, and camping. That's tomorrow's KCUR Up to Date. Well, it's fire season again in western Kansas after last year's blazes. That's not good news. In 2017 in Kansas alone, large wildfires in 20 counties devoured more than 650,000 acres, more than 1,000 square miles, and destroyed more than 40 homes and an unknown number of outbuildings. In Clark County alone, home to Ashland, more than 460,000 acres burned, making it the most widespread single fire on record for the state. Authorities say recovery after efforts will take years and cost tens of millions of dollars. This year, it's so dry that one of our guests likens the sound of walking through grass, dry from the lack of moisture, to the crunching sound of walking through snow. One firefighter said it's so dry that two grasshoppers mating could start a fire. That's what he said. We're joined now by a couple of residents of Ashland. They are Kendall Kay. He's the mayor of Ashland, Kansas, population 807. Mayor, it's nice to have you. Welcome.
Steve, thank you so much.
Greg Gardner is also on the line. He's a rancher at the Gardner Angus Ranch out there. Greg, nice to have you.
Thank you, Steve.
We should say, for those who don't know it, that Ashland is in southwest Kansas, about 13 miles north of the Oklahoma border and about 50 miles south-southwest from Dodge City. Mayor, what's the current situation in Ashland like today? Is anything on fire right now?
No, not right now. It's just still super dry. Has been all winter.
And how worried are you about something breaking out?
You know, today not as bad because the humidity is higher and we've had a little, I mean a little moisture, but worried is, yes, absolutely. The conditions are just as bad as what they were a year ago. We've had a couple fires in the area. One in particular on March 5th. It was the first Monday in March, almost within 10 minutes of the one that started last year that burnt 1,700 acres. And back in the day, 1,700 acres, pretty large fire, seems kind of small now.
Greg Gardner, hop in here. What happened out there in the first Monday of March this year when the wind was so high that day?
Well, interestingly enough, we should have probably learned from our past experiences, but on that particular day, there was a seismograph crew that was running their equipment across pasture land, and as we saw in the aftermath, there was a worker that was idling his pickup in the pasture, and that caught on fire and started the fire, which Mayor Kay is talking about and referencing. And for a lot of us that lived through the Starbuck fire, it was kind of an emotional punch in the gut to look up and see the billowing smoke again on the anniversary.
Greg, how much, I asked the mayor this, but how much tension is there out there among the residents of Ashland who are, I'm sure, just, you know, sitting on the edge of their seats wondering, are we going to experience this all over again this year?
Oh, it's interesting. I mean, is in all aspects of life. Everyone deals with things differently. I mean, we actually have people in our community that have struggled with post-traumatic stress syndrome, but yet life goes on, and it's something that we deal with and in our environment and what we do and in our lifestyle and production agriculture, it's part of the risks that we have to take.
Mayor, you mentioned you got a little bit of moisture in recent days. How much moisture did you get? Because I know it wasn't very much.
No, it really wasn't. About a week ago, but we're thankful for anything. You know, October 6th was our real last time it rained of any significance, about a half inch in some areas. Nothing all winter long. And about a week ago, parts, and Greg will mention out in his ranch, maybe 10 to 1,500, so I say little sparingly, just east of here, upwards of an inch, so all across the board, but that's not much when the last time it rained of anything was October 6th.
Mayor, do smart people, meteorologists, have an explanation for why it's been so dry in Clark County there?
It's dry, not just in Clark County, but over a very large area, and you have the high-pressure system just parked right over the top of us. It does kind of appear like conditions are starting to change just a little bit to where there's some more chances of moisture, but they really haven't transpired anything. But as Greg mentioned earlier, I mean, in agriculture, you're accustomed to volatility in the markets, volatility as it relates to weather, and it's been dry before, and we adapt to that. None of us like it, and we absolutely need the moisture. I mean, it's critical in what we do for Americans all day, every day, that we need the moisture, but it'll rain again. We're a day closer today.
Greg Gardner, I think you've said you don't recall anything like this in terms of dryness any time in your lifetime.
Interestingly enough, a report I read last week, when the National Weather Service started keeping records in 1874, this actually has been the driest period since that time on record. And in my lifetime, which I'm 59 years old, and I don't ever remember seeing a time period in a six-month period that you don't pour something out of the rain gauge 15, 20 hundredths, quarter inch. And as Kendall said, Ashland received their last rain in October. Our last rain was September 25th here on the ranch and until last week, and we got approximately 30 hundredths. But that's a long time to go without anything falling from the sky.
And, Greg, walking through the grass out there, it sounds like you're walking through crunching snow?
That is correct. It just crackles as you walk through it. Interestingly enough, for several reasons of how the cycles of nature followed up after the Starbuck fire, but we have as much fuel, as Kendall referenced, as we did in 2017 because the generosity of the rains we received. Now they've shut off, and until the weather pattern in the Pacific Ocean reverses its cycle temperature-wise, this portion of the United States is still going to continue to be dry, and they anticipate a long-range forecast mid to late summer, getting some relief. And as Kendall said, we're starting to see some movement of the pressure systems, and we'll get some sooner or later.
Greg, I'm confused by that. Didn't the fires last year, they're called the Starbuck fires, didn't they burn all the fuel that there is to burn right now?
That is correct. In a 48-hour period, there was one of the reasons that the fire became contained was there was no more fuel for it to burn. After that time period for 3 weeks, the wind and everything continued to blow in this portion of March is our transitional seasonal month, and we have very high winds anyway. But 3 weeks after the Starbuck fire, we started receiving rain, and for our annual rainfall in this area of Clark County and the portion of the state, we annually get 18 to 20 inches. Well, from 3 weeks after the fire, the end of March until September 25th, we received 22 inches.
Wow.
And the interesting phenomenon, because the reason that we had the built-up fuel source for the Starbuck fire, we've been coming out of a drought, and a lot of folks were managing their pastures to let regrowth occur. And so some of those pastures all across the southern border of Kansas had not had cattle on it for 2 years just to let the grass and land heal. So there was an abundance of fire. So when our infrastructures and all of our fences were totally destroyed, we could not manage the grass and the vegetation as it came back this year, which was actually a good thing to let the land and the grass systems recover. But once again, we have an abundance of fuel, and as we've got our infrastructures rebuilt, we're set up for the same scenario, having not received moisture throughout the winter.
So the fuel has things have regrown with all that rain last year, is what you're saying, Greg?
Correct. That is, and yeah, that's one of the great blessings of the fire and the aftermath. We literally could have been headed into, if we'd have had a winter like this, we could have been heading into the Dirty 30s portion of Kansas history with the drifting and blowing sands and nothing to hold the topsoil down. And so, you know, the good Lord looked after us and sent us the rains we needed. And we actually, I never thought I'd see it, the land heal that quickly. But by midsummer, we had vegetation across and was holding the soil down. And so that's one of the great blessings of what happened. But now we're dealing with a little bit of adversity again.
We're talking about fire season out in western Kansas with two gentlemen from the Ashland, Kansas area down in southwest Kansas. Mayor, what does Ashland look like today compared to before the fires came last year, and how did you manage to save the town?
There was only one way we managed to save the town, two ways, I guess, and first being the grace of God, but then the second, you know, volunteer fire departments are amazing on what they can do, but the fires actually were coming from the southwest, and there was coming up from Oklahoma across the county, and then one in the far northern part of the county. As those fires approached right on the west edge of Ashland, the wind shifted, and I'm telling you, the wind was blowing 50 mile an hour, and you couldn't get them stopped. If we had had more volunteer, it wouldn't have mattered. I mean, there was just such a terrible day for a fire. But then as that wind shifted, it comes straight out of the north, and we were very fortunate to have a wheat field right on the north side of town that pushed it around onto each side. Unfortunately, when it come out of the north, it burnt. I mean, it's just everything from Ashland north is grass. And it's primarily all we have in our county. And so to get it stopped took the grace of God and just hard work by the volunteers to save Ashland. If we had started one structure in Ashland, it would have all been gone. To answer your question of what it looks like, it's amazing in 1 year's time that in the county, 95% of the fence has been rebuilt. That's only because of support from so many and just a lot of hard work.
And a lot of folks are rebuilding with metal fence this time, right?
Not everybody, but a good number are. And lesson learned from that perspective is because, quite frankly, and we don't like it, but there'll be another fire. And just as there was on March 5th of this year, I mean, when there's another fire, as that fire burns through with the metal post, the fence is still standing. And that's a good thing. So the community is we're on our way to recover. We've thought that would have been a 3 to 5 year project. To think it's done in 1 year's time is amazing. But the recovery part of it, is the financial part of it, to recover is going to take some time.
Greg, a lot of folks out there, a lot of residents have built fire lines around their homes. How do they do it, and what do those things look like?
Well, interestingly enough, trying to learn from the lessons of the past and our experiences, talked to one gentleman east of us the other day, and one of the things he has done is farmed a fire break around his residence, and what he would have done was to take a disc and turn the soil over for several swaths around his house, and to keep the fire from jumping straight from the field to the house. A lot of the things that folks tell us to do or for fire prevention is to keep your lawns mowed short and
right.
Your trees trimmed back. But
wow.
a lot of areas in southwest Kansas don't have trees, and so that's not a problem to keep them trimmed back. But those are some of the precautions that
right.
they've done. But the interesting thing is I've thought about it, you know.
I got 10 seconds, father, Greg. Yeah.
Well, yes. That's some of the things that they've done.
Well, I appreciate your stories, gentlemen. I wish you all the best in getting through this season again. That's Greg Gardner, a rancher at the Gardner Angus Ranch, and Kendall Kay, mayor of Ashland, Kansas. Gentlemen, thanks so much, and again, best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, Dr. Natasha Berger returns for a conversation about the measles cases popping up in the metro here. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Kathleen Pointer, and Claire Verbeck. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.